As always in our scriptures, we have beautiful passages to pray with today on this great feast of the baptism, which, as I mentioned, brings Christmas to a close liturgically and launches us off in ordinary time for a long run this year until a late Lent begins in early March. And the readings, especially the first readings, are worthy of some further contemplation just in their own beautiful phrasing. So we'll look again really fast at Isaiah 42, our first reading for this year in the feast. Thus says the Lord, here is my servant, whom I uphold, my chosen one, with whom I am pleased, upon whom I put my spirit. He shall bring forth justice to the nations, and he is going to establish to the coastlands his teaching. Isaiah goes on, I have called you for victory. I've grasped you by the hand. I've formed you and set you as a covenant for the people, a light to the nations, to open the eyes of the blind, to bring out those in prison and from the dungeon those who live in darkness. Those are grand things to say. Grand things. So we could ask the question, who is he talking to? To whom is this addressed? Who is this amazing person who's going to do all these things? The servant, the one that God is pleased with, the one who will be the light, who will bring teaching, who will bring liberation. Who is this person? What will happen is that it will become clear in the rest of this passage from Isaiah that God is talking to his son, Israel. The nation, the people collectively is a son. That's how God is speaking to them through Isaiah's words. And as more time passes in this particular time in Israel's history, they're going to think about themselves more and more as God's anointed son. With Israel, God is pleased. With Israel, God will be the light to the world. Through Israel, there will be justice and freedom and liberation. Through Israel, there will be victory. On Israel, the Spirit rests with favor. That's who God is talking to. Now, it's worthy of reflection to step back and think about the context for this passage. Because what has probably the case, as best we can tell, is that this portion of Isaiah, this pivotal portion of it actually, was spoken and written down during the time of the exile. And as you've heard me say now dozens of times over the years about the exile, it was a very, very hard part of their history. They had lost the royal palace, they had lost the temple, they had lost their homeland, they had lost their status, they'd lost their sons and daughters to the war and the captivity, they'd lost their leadership, they had frankly lost it all. And they were convinced, some of them, that this had happened as a punishment to them. This was some sort of a curse, and that the covenant was off, and that God was done with these people. So in light of that, in light of their circumstances of a broken people tossed out of their own homeland, hear Isaiah say this to them was kind of an astonishing thing. Highly unlikely, they thought to themselves, that this could even be true. So, what does Isaiah say to the broken people in exile with nothing left? You're my son. I'm pleased with you. You're going to be a mighty light. Your voice is going to go to the coastlands. You're going to be the bearer of justice and peace and liberty. And they went, really? Like now? Seriously? They didn't know how to take this first. It took a while for it to sink in that this really was true. But it was, in fact, the case. And as time passes, history will show that's exactly what God does. God takes his son Israel and uses the nation to be his face to the world. Not in a way they would have first thought, different way, unlikely way, but nonetheless, this is the beginning of the preparation of the fact that God is going to put his face into humanity. So Isaiah, first reading, is the beginning of the idea that the most unlikely of persons, let's call it nation here, can be God's face, can be God's servant, and can be his anointed. Would not have made sense to those looking at it at first, but in God's plan, yes, Israel is his son, is his face with whom he is pleased. Fast forward to the gospel. Luke, we hear it this year. A similar dynamic is at work, actually. Let's put ourselves on the bank of the Jordan River, on that afternoon somewhere in the Judean desert in the middle of nowhere where John the Baptizer is out baptizing hundreds of people, I suppose, maybe thousands, who knows. And there one day appears on the shore this scruffy guy who wades out into the water and stands before John, his cousin, and kneels down in the water, most likely, and there he is baptized. And you watch this from the riverbank, and you see this interesting, rather ordinary character. And as soon as he comes up out of the waters, as the Gospels relate, the heavens are opened, the Spirit comes down upon him, and the voice from the sky speaks, "This is my Son, my beloved, in whom I am pleased. He will be the light. Here will be the bearing of justice. Here will be my face," you might say. Now, if you're in the crowd and you hear this voice, "This is my Son, this is amazing," you look around and go, "That guy? He's the carpenter, right? From Nazareth? This ordinary person who looks just like all the rest of us is anointed somehow to be God's messenger and light and bearer of truth? Really? I don't believe it, right? Couldn't be him." Fast forward a couple of years and look at the cross depicted before us here in our sanctuary. Here again is God's anointed, the one who appears to be rejected and cursed and cast off by God in Jewish thought. That's a crucified person was, they were rejected. So who would think that this would be God's anointed one? Highly unlikely at first glance. And yet, as time passes, that's exactly how it turns out to be, isn't it? This is his face. The face of the Father is Jesus Christ. He is the anointed. He is the bearer. He is the messenger. He is the light. He is the voice. He is all these things that Isaiah said to Israel come to a deeper perfection in the only begotten Son. One prepares for the other, you see. And yet, if you're a Palestinian in that time period, you don't think that this guy at all could possibly be the Savior. Really? We'd say. Really, God says. Fast forward to today, last cycle in the sequence that I'll mention this morning. Here we all are this morning. Most of us here, I suspect, the baptized. And in baptism, therefore, that makes us the anointed. That means that we can read these words of Isaiah again as though they are speaking about us. "This is my servant whom I uphold," God says to you and to me, all of us gathered here. "My chosen one with whom I am pleased." God says to me, he says to you, "I am pleased with you, upon whom I put my spirit. You're going to bring forth justice. You are going to be a voice to the coastlands. You are going to be the bearer of victory. It is you," God says to me and to you this morning, "that I've grasped by the hand. I formed you as a light for the nations, to open the eyes of the blind, to bring those into freedom who are in confinement. That is you," God says. You, me, us. This is who he is talking to. And our reaction is, "Really? Me? That seems so unlikely. I work at the high school. I'm a mom. I drive taxi here in West Bend. I'm a farmer. I'm a lawyer. I'm this, I'm that. I don't think of myself," we often say, "as anything that this reading is talking about. Perhaps he's talking about somebody else." God says, "No. Talking about you." And perhaps the hardest one of all these things, I think, to think about is this little line in here, which is so important. God says, "I am pleased with you. On you my favor rests." And we often think in our hearts, "That cannot be me. Surely God cannot like me." We wrestle with our own kind of unworthiness, do we not? I certainly do. I think a lot of us do. And it's a great trick of the devil to make us think that somehow this must be somebody else's story. We can't possibly be pleasing to God. Well, that's false. So this same dynamic plays out over and over again throughout history. It seems that God picks the most unlikely of figures, Israel, Jesus of Nazareth, all of us, to be his anointed face for the world. That's precisely what he does. God could have done lots of things. He could have put any plan, but this is the one that he picked. And in this plan, what this means, and this is why the baptism as a feast is the end of the Christmas season as the exclamation point on the entire thing, it means that the child born in Bethlehem will show his face to the world in every single new generation through the baptized. We are the face. And not because of something that we have done. On the contrary, baptism makes us into this. It's given to us. And flowing through our veins in grace is the power to do all these things, to restore sight, to heal, to unbind, to bind, to teach, to be the light. That's what the church is, his face. And we look at it today in our contemporary context, I think the Catholic Church, the baptized, that's the face of God with all of our problems and difficulties. Really? Couldn't that be somebody else? But God says, no, really, that's it. You're it. That's extraordinary. That means when we take that in, that that should ground us and root us like nothing else possibly can. So we could say, I'm God's son or daughter? Yes. I'm not unworthy of everything else? God says, it's a gift to you. I can be forgiven? Absolutely. I got a shot at heaven? Yes. I can be the bearer of Christ's teachings? Of course. So that means that all the other passing things that come and go in life that we're always kind of grabbing onto don't matter as much, because what roots us and grounds us completely is that we are the adopted sons and daughters of the Father with whom he is well pleased. Therefore, when the world wants to see Jesus and the Father and the Son, here we are. We are him in the world. He's moved into his church in a dramatic and powerful way. That is, when you think about it, a lot of responsibility. Think of all the weight I'm piling on our shoulders, right, to be all these things. But God says that's why there are sacraments, that's why you're baptized, that's why you're fed from the altar, that's why you go to confession, that's why there are saints, that's why there are scriptures, that's why there's the Mass, that's why there is prayer. You don't do it by yourselves, Israel, by yourself, no. Jesus, certainly not by himself, ever. Same thing for us, never by ourselves. His grace makes it possible. Through his grace, once again, we are his face in every single generation. And through us, in that way, he is born anew over and over and over again. Brilliant plan on God's part. That is worthy of a lot of reflection. At the core of the Christian life is getting ourselves to really believe this truth. We really are the adopted sons and daughters in baptism. Tremendous, tremendous. That is at the same time both terrifying, if you think about it, and absolutely awesome. What could possibly be more exciting and amazing and grace-filled than that? So, in the end, it's just a matter of believing it. Not somebody else, not some other person. Us. Us. The anointed, the baptized, the adopted sons and daughters of the Most High.